T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Dale and Keith, middays on the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
Probably a third of the league have reached out to inquire about Russell Wilson. And remember, Seahawks general manager John Schneider is not one of those people who ever says, we have nothing to talk about. He listens to anything and everything. What's a realistic price if the Seahawks were to trade Russell Wilson? I think you start with something like 3 first-round draft picks. That's kind of the message that other teams believe, would be conveyed.
Hour number 3, Dale and Keefe, Sports Radio WEEI. Nick Fitzy Stevens is in the house. So let's just, for the sake of our discussion, say that the price for Russell Wilson is 3 first-round picks, and hell, I'll throw in Stephon Gilmore. Yes?
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Sure. Yes?
Yep. Absolutely do that. I think it's a no-brainer. And I also think part of... I know Bill has been under a lot of criticism really all season long during the Super Bowl. I still think he's one of the best coaches. And again, I think the roster construction is much more where there's a lot of debate. In fact, you can really, really kind of criticize there. But, you know, much like we used to talk about maximizing Tom Brady's window, is there any idea of kind of maximizing Bill Belichick's? Like, if Bill Belichick realistically is going to coach for 4 or 5 more years, don't you want to let him get Russell Wilson or somebody like that and see if he can really go after it? Rather than if he goes to the rookie quarterback mode, is he really going to be there when this guy hits his stride and becomes a Pro Bowler or maybe even an All-Pro? Like, if a guy like Russell Wilson's available, you need to overspend and get him.
All right, so Bill, in the past, talking about Russell Wilson, the opposing quarterback, has always waxed poetic about this guy. You know, nobody in the league does more good things than him, yada, yada, yada. I don't think it's all just happy talk. I think he does genuinely admire Russell Wilson's game. But if you're Bill Belichick, are you now thinking, okay, I got Russell Wilson, but I don't have first-round picks for the next 3 years to add to, you know, give him some guys to play with? Am I really making a step forward if I do that? Now, don't get me wrong. I would do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Does Bill think, am I going to be able to put a team around him?
Yes. Yeah, yes. I would think yes. So. I mean, the last 3 first-round picks were N'Keal Harry, Isaiah Wynn, and Sony Michel. If you could trade those 3 guys for anybody in the league right now, you probably would. And I know Wynn's solid. I don't want to diminish Isaiah Wynn completely.
Right.
But if you could trade those guys, you would. Last year, you had a first-round pick. You loved it so much, you traded down for more 2s and 3s and things like that. So they'll still have other draft picks, and there are still other ways to make up the rest of your roster. And much like Tom Brady for most of his 20 years here, he is going to also make up for so many other things. And if you have Russell Wilson, it's the same thing. Russell Wilson will be able to make up for all kinds of roster issues that you might have. He started to do it the last couple of years in Seattle. Now, I know they're not winning Super Bowls, but they are a winning record, just rolling out of bed. They are a playoff team seemingly every year. And that's in large part due to Russell Wilson, because the rest of that roster, ever since the Legion of Boom broke up, hasn't been all that impressive.
Who was the let's in 2013, 2014, hell, even 2012, when Russell Wilson comes in and steals the job, those first couple of years, who did they have? It was aside from okay, yes, they had beast mode, so they had one of the best running backs of all time, which of course, when you've got a Derrick Henry type, opens up the entire field. Who? What was the rest of their offense? It was
Javon not much.
Kearse, they Chris had Matthews, Doug Baldwin.
They had Golden Tate, I believe. They had Sidney Rice for a year or two. It was
they didn't
was
have
not
Golden
crazy.
Tate by the time they go to the Super Bowl in 2014, and yet he had guys wide open against a pretty darn good Patriots secondary in that game. Dale, I would. I don't know about you, Pats fan who's listening to this honk, this super fan, this guy who's been, you know, praying at the altar of Belichick and has dedicated so much of his adult grown life or supposed adult life to the Patriots. You can't tell me outside of four first round picks, anything under and therein, I would absolutely consider for Russell Wilson, because A, it gives your franchise an immediate boost. Robert Kraft is going to knows he's going to sell tickets and jerseys out the wazoo, and they're relevant again. They're competitive again. And this gives them somebody to work with the next 5 years, and they can draft somebody and take chances on a new Garoppolo-style plan for Belichick to set the franchise a sail towards success again.
The narrative is that Bill Belichick doesn't think you need an elite quarterback to win in the National Football League, even though he had the greatest quarterback of all time for the last 19 years. So in Belichick's mind, does he even need Russell Wilson? I'll go get Matt Glennon. I'll be just as good. I'm kidding. Obviously not him, but you know.
Yeah,
what I'm
see.
Saying?
I think to put it this way, I bet Bill Belichick would rather have four first round picks and Jimmy Garoppolo than Russell Wilson and like a second round pick or whatever you had to give up for Garoppolo. Like if those were the two, just based off of history, that'd be my guess. Which way he would lean? Again, you don't want the bottom of the barrel. Like, I don't think any coach, even as good as they've been, I don't think any is naive enough to think you can take the worst quarterback in the league and win with them. They just proved this past year. You went 7-9. So you need someone more middle of the pack. But if the one of the top two, three quarterbacks in the league is available, I don't know how you can turn that down or look away from that. Like, maybe they don't have the best trade package. Maybe they can't get them, but you got to at least try. And
yeah, I would think anybody in the league who needs a quarterback would give three first-round picks and X.
I would think so. And he said a third of the league called. It should be more than a third. This is like,
you know what? Two-thirds of the league doesn't believe that they'll deal him anyway.
No, a couple teams are happy with the quarterback. Yeah, the Chiefs won't be. The Chiefs
I was
going to
say that Mahomes, Brady,
Arizona.
I guess Kyler Murray, maybe Josh Allen. It's the same list we talked about with Deshaun Watson, although Deshaun Watson probably should open it up a little bit more because he's younger. But Russell Wilson has said he wants to play till he's 40 or older. Or did he say 45 or 40? Either way, if you got Russell Wilson, he would be the quarterback for the rest of Bill Belichick's coaching career.
Oh, no, I agree with that.
And but that's pretty important to have. And then you can really spend all of your other time looking for all the other positions.
But if Belichick actually does believe in his heart of hearts that you can win with a middle of the pack quarterback, he's not going near this, right? He's not giving up three first round picks and X because
probably
I don't
not.
Need to.
Probably not, unless, you know, who are the middle of the road quarterbacks? They already didn't go after Stafford very hard. They already didn't go after Wentz, because some of the names that you mentioned before aren't middle of the road quarterbacks.
No,
Mariota's not in my mind. Jacoby Brissett is not. Cam Newton right now, unfortunately, is not. Stidham is not. Like, a lot of those guys are bottom of the league quarterbacks. So I think even Bill would say, all right, well, I can't win with them. So sure, he would like a good value, like the 15th best quarterback in the league with good value he would take. But if those guys aren't available and somehow the second best quarterback in the league is available, that's what would be best for the franchise. Go nuts. Go after him.
And let me ask you this. Okay, so we're sitting here saying, like, Pro Football Focus said Jacoby Myers was a top 30 receiver. His ceiling could expand with a good quarterback. Asiasi and Keene, WTF are these guys? N'Keal Harry, either he cashes in this year or forget about the fifth-year option. They'll kick his ass to the curb before he plays a fourth year in Foxborough. How much better does a Russell Wilson and that three first-round draft pick investment in him make all of these players who you've recently spent equity on in the first place?
Yeah, I think he...
Exponentially.
I think he absolutely picks their game up. Now, I don't know if
definitely
they turn into...
It absolutely changes the prospectus of free agents. I mean, now all of a sudden, if you're Hunter Henry, if you're Allen Robinson, you're saying, I'd play with Russell Wilson.
Oh,
sure.
Yeah, because now it's the combination of it's Belichick and Wilson. That suddenly becomes the best coach-quarterback combination in the entire league. You know, just the AFC East, the Patriots go from the worst quarterback in the division to the best in the division, and a true rival head-to-head with Mahomes. Like, that more than puts you back on the map. I mean, that makes you a contender. And I know they have a lot of other needs, but I would trust Bill to be able to figure that out, you know, to find either the next Lawrence guy or the next Kyle Van Noy or the next all these pieces. That I have faith in. Him getting the next quarterback, like, let's see. He hasn't really had to do it, so I'm not saying he can't, but that's the most difficult thing to do in all of football is find that quarterback.
Do you guys think that? Go ahead, Fitz.
I was going to say if Gilmore doesn't excite them because they take a step back quarterback wise, and now they're spending 70% of what they would have spent on Dangerous on Stephon Gilmore with a quarterback situation out in Seattle, I would even say, okay, I'll give you three firsts and J.C. Jackson. If they said that's the price right now, their fax machine would be ringing with a contract offer, or it'd be like the PDF is in your inbox.
Don't you guys think, though, that Belichick, in some respects, has looked back on the 20 years here, and it feels like he's come to the conclusion that having a franchise quarterback, and I don't want to use the word diva, that's the wrong word, but that, you know, that central figure is a pain in the ass. You got to cater to them. You got other issues. You got massage therapists who want room in the facility. You got this problem. You got that problem. You know what? I'll go get Cam Newton, who's not a very good quarterback anymore, but everybody loves him, and it sure makes my life easier. Or I'll go get quarterback X. I don't have that. If I bring Russell Wilson in, he's bringing Ciara with him. The next thing I know, I got all the same problems I had with Tom and Giselle. Does he just say, screw it, I'll go another route?
I hope not, because I feel like going 7-9 is worse than all that.
Yes.
Like, now maybe you didn't realize that. Maybe at the time you're like, I'm ready to move on from Tom and we'll replace him and we'll be fine. But after actually going through a full season where the last 2 weeks of the year you weren't even in playoff contention. Like, they were eliminated after week 15. It really felt earlier than that, but that was mathematically eliminated after week 15. That would make me, if you're Belichick, kind of rethink some of your thoughts that you had. So even if that was something that he believed in, truly, I think after the way the season played out, you kind of have to change your tune on that.
And the whole thing is that only Robert Kraft knows when Belichick is going to retire or hang it up, supposedly. He might coach another 5 years, even though he said he didn't want to pull a Marv Levy. But the most important thing for Robert and for Bill is to make sure this franchise is set and steadied and successful again before they hand it off to either Steven or whoever the next coach is, or especially when Jonathan officially takes over, though we believe he's actually running the show for the most part right now. And how do you do that? By getting another franchise quarterback in here to stabilize things, create a new winning culture, and then, like I said, groom the eventual Russell Wilson successor behind him. He's 32. He's now just playing his best football. And he,
by the way, he says he's going to play till 45. He said that Super Bowl week.
Fantastic. You know what? Fantastic. Great. And I don't doubt him, because he looks like the kind of guy who lives clean, who lives a lifestyle that is conducive to playing into his 40s, as opposed to, you know, like he's no Jared Lorenzen, RIP. You know, he's not someone who's just out, like, you know, he's not going to be like Joe Namath with broken knees, you know, and hangovers every other day. I think I can do it.
So let me ask you this about, let's say that Belichick says, you know what, I'm not doing the diva quarterback thing again. That's a pain in my butt. I'm going to get this guy, that guy. At what point, if the owner of the team says, Bill, come here for a minute. You know, we went from Tom to Cam. That didn't work out. I hear this Russell Wilson guy's available. I'd kind of like to have that guy as the flagpole for my franchise here. At that point, does Belichick say, screw it, I'm out? Or does he, okay, Robert, that's what you want. That's what I'll go do.
I don't think Robert would do that. Don't you think Robert's kind of resigned to the fact if he's not going to stick up and make them keep Tom Brady, that I don't think he's making any roster moves at all. And I think that would go against what's made them so successful the last 20 years. Let Bill, for better or worse, make the decisions. He's the football guy.
Even if Bill is wrong, as you think and I think, I don't need a franchise quarterback. I just need a middle-of-the-road quarterback to win in the NFL. I think that's wrong. You think that's wrong. What if Robert thinks it's wrong?
I don't know. I feel like it might be too late for that. I feel like you're committed to Bill or you're not. You can't be like half in with Bill. But yeah, we want you to coach, but I will get somebody else to do the roster. That's not going to happen.
But this isn't just like searching for a franchise quarterback. A quarterback of Deshaun Watson or Russell Wilson's caliber, talent, and accomplishment doesn't come available very often. And when they do, you better damn well make sure you're at least in the mix. Otherwise, you could have egg all over your face.
Mm-hmm. See, that's the thing. If one of these unbelievable, this will never happen opportunities fall into your lap. I mean, if Pete Carroll calls Bill Belichick and says, listen, I would never normally do this, but he really wants out of here. Russ is available. You interested? How does Bill say, no, I'm not? Or does he say, yeah, I'll give you a second round pick for him? I mean, does he really do something like that?
I don't know. I mean, he offered a second for Stafford, and clearly the price was a lot higher. And I know Wilson's in a tier or two tiers above Stafford, but we'll see. I just hope they were one of those teams. If they said 10 teams called, Patriots better be one of them, because they certainly don't have a quarterback.
How would they not? I mean, how do they not at least kick the tires, do something? I mean, don't you have to at least look at it? I don't think he'll ultimately get traded, but if he kicks and moans enough that they ultimately have to maybe think about it, you got to at least figure out if you're in the running.
I think if you just stop and think for a second, like, yeah, we say like, okay, Arizona, Kansas City, maybe one or two other teams are immediate off the boards. But if you try to think, if you just quickly deduce what 10 teams may have called, the Patriots absolutely would have been one of those 10 teams.
Yeah.
I would hope so.
Pittsburgh, probably. Miami, I would say Miami, Pittsburgh, New England, Washington football team, maybe Jerry Jones.
New York.
The Jets, the Broncos, maybe the Raiders, because they can maybe offer Derek Carr and two firsts or something like that. And I don't know, the Saints, the Vikings, and San Francisco. There's 10 for you right there. Who else? Everyone else seems pretty set at their core. And Chicago, there's 11.
Yep.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. Fitzy's continuing his armchair GM series. Turns his attention to possibly having to replace James White on this year's roster. We'll get to that in just a couple of minutes. Back to your calls as well. It's Dale and Keefe with Fitzy and Shime's Time to Trend.
Just want to say on the side note, you guys make working from home bearable. I really enjoy listening to you guys all the time.
It's not bearable for me, but I'm glad it's bearable for you.
Back to Dale and Keefe
on EEI.
All right, Fitzy has undertaken a labor of love. It is his armchair GM series. He's gone position by position, taking over for Bill Belichick and figuring out how to populate the Patriots roster. And today he has turned his attention to the running back position, where we may see some turnover here.
So I don't think any one of us would say that running back is a priority, a high-level concern. You wouldn't flag that email in your inbox when you're looking to things the Patriots need to address for the 2021 season, correct?
Yeah, it's one of the few positions where you're like, sure, they could be better, but it's not a mess like so many of the others.
Right. Well, last year the Patriots finished fourth in the NFL with 2,346 rushing yards. Now, almost 600 of those came from your quarterback, but still, that's pretty damn impressive. Now, you may see some attrition on the offensive line, but I think even if you lose Joe Tooney, hopefully they keep David Andrews, if you lose Joe Tooney, move over on Wenyu, blah, 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 we think that the Patriots' offensive line will be fine, if not just as good, going into next season, which helps a lot in the running game.
Oh, huge.
And your lead back issue has been solved, at least for the 2021 season, because I think it's going to be a hammer combo of Damian Harris, who has been a little injury prone, let's be honest, his first 2 years, and Sony Michel, who looked a hell of a lot better, maybe even better than his 2018 form when he came back in the second half of the 2020 season. That's a pretty good 1-2 punch. However, you probably are not going to give Sony Michel the fifth-year option, which means this is probably a walk season for him. You want to build some depth behind him. Maybe you need to address that. That's a later in the draft issue. The biggest thing facing the Patriots, and this is a huge part of their offense, is the passing downs / third down back. It looks like James White, he's a free agent. Now, we can't say with any certainty that he's about to walk because we've heard nothing from him other than there are some teams allegedly interested in him, like Green Bay, where he could go back to college. Miami could be as well, be a great fit there, or in Tampa Bay. If you lose James White, you have a problem. Because not only is he a safety valve, the dump off, not only is he a good blitz pickup, he is the latest in this long line of excellent Patriots third down backs, a position, Dale, that has been a major strength for them for 20 straight seasons.
And a safety valve for Tom Brady.
For Tom Brady, and especially for whoever is the new quarterback, Jimmy G, Ryan Fitzpatrick, rookie quarterback, Russell Wilson, I don't care, whoever it is.
Although the quarterback who was here last year didn't seem to be able to hit backs coming out of the backfield very well.
No, but he sure found James White a lot and got, you know, he bailed out Cam Newton more often than not, and also he almost got him killed a bunch of times. Plus, yeah. You also had Rex Burkhead. Now, Rex Burkhead's health is in question. You can't shove him in for a season to the James White role and then try to find the next guy. You're going to need an immediate contributor in the third down passing back role if you lose James White. Now, the free agent market is not looking that good in terms of picking up a guy only a couple of restricted free agents would interest me, and I don't think you're going to be able to convince Denver not to put a second or a first-round tag on Philip Lindsay. So what do? You end up having to go to the draft. Luckily this year, though it is not the greatest, it's not a very top-heavy running back draft, there's really only two studs that'll probably go in the first round, Najee Harris and Travis Etienne.
And you're not spending a first-round pick on a running back anyway.
No, you don't need to.
No.
But maybe spending a third-round pick on a guy who could come in here and offer you third-down passing back value, and maybe, just maybe, you could find what is the flavor du jour in the NFL. You could find an Alvin Kamara type. Somebody like a Curtis Samuel, if you will, who you can employ in a wide receiver capacity and also as a running back, maybe gives you some between-the-tackle value, definitely a third-down back. Luckily, in this week's Armchair GM, I believe I have identified a couple of them in the coming draft. Has anyone heard of the name Demetric Felton?
No.
Excellent.
Is that a type of cloth?
I need more information. Can you use it in a sentence?
Yes. As in, the New England Patriots would be very lucky to pick up hybrid offensive weapon Demetric Felton from UCLA.
Wow.
He was a standout in the Senior Bowl. He's a wide receiver. He's listed at wide receiver slash RB, so he's a human flex, if you will, Rich, on your fantasy team.
Okay, like this.
And he says he models his game after Alvin Kamara, wants to be the next Alvin Kamara, is a nightmare in space, great with the ball in the backfield, slop in the slot, splitting out wide, third down back. This kid can do anything. Even, believe it or not, even Andy Hart, in a little series we did highlighting Senior Bowl standouts, Andy Hart said this was the kid of all the players in the Senior Bowl he thinks would be the perfect fit for a stagnant and anemic New England Patriots offense. How about that? Even Andy Hart and I agreed on something for a change.
I don't believe you, but okay. I'll have to take your word for it.
There's a guy by the name of Kenneth Gainwell, who's actually pretty good out of Memphis. Gotta love that last name. Jamar Jefferson, who maybe some of the stat nerds may have heard of, coming out of Oregon State. These are all guys who can, and the Patriots have also met with him virtually, so maybe they have already started to kind of like pre-identify that next James White. Same size. Because don't forget, James White was a stud running back at Wisconsin. Thousands of yards, multiple touchdowns. Oh, yeah. But running is not his strength in the NFL. He can take a nice draw for you, the occasional handoff, but being that reliable third down back, taking the reins from Vereen, you know, maintaining the mantle of Kevin Falk, if you will. I don't think it's going to be J.J. Taylor. I think he's just too small. He's a nice little energy back, nice little change of pace. But I think you would expose him if you tried to push the James White role on him. I'd rather they take a chance on one of those guys, or maybe the most mercurial talent of all the running backs in this coming draft. Has anyone heard of Chuba Hubbard? That's a real name.
I have heard that.
Yes,
the name
absolutely
sticks out at you.
He was awesome 2 years ago.
That's the thing. Like, I put his highlight tape in.
And then
the
he
piece.
Hated his. Then he got in the whole thing with Mike Gundy because then Gundy, he thought he was racist or something. There was a whole serious thing.
Had the OAN shirt on.
Yep, and he only played. And he only played 7 games a season. COVID shortened season. A little bit of an opt out thing for him. But if you watch his 2019 highlight reel, you see this Marcus Allen, Robert Smith type, who just makes one move, finds a hole, beats everybody to it, and his guy had like 21 touchdowns for Oklahoma State.
And 2,000 yards.
Over 2,000. And you can't catch. Like, if you miss him, he gone. This is he is the human definition of he gone. But was he a product of their system, hitting wide open holes any one of us could have run through? Or is he someone who's worth taking a flyer on because you just can't teach speed and talent like this? And I'm curious how the Patriots feel. Do they want the more steady, safer option like a Gainwell or a Jamar Jefferson? Or would they take a chance on somebody like Felton or Hubbard, who could be Curtis Samuel, except they come in on a rookie deal and now you're not spending $12 million on Curtis Samuel?
If you got Chuba Hubbard, at least the team would have a new theme song.
I get knocked down, but I get up again.
They were just waiting. They were praying you were going to say that name.
I think every time we've mentioned that guy's name, we have made that joke.
Yeah.
You okay, Fitzy?
No, I'm laughing because it's like you waiting to play the Magnum Dong drop, and also, I've never seen Keith so dead inside.
Chubba Hubba, that's what we're doing now?
Chumba Wumba.
Close enough.
Chubba
Hubba Chubba. Oh,
Chubba Wumba.
But, I mean, like this...
You
like,
play
it's,
that
it's,
at
First
Gillette?
Of all, it's Chuba, okay?
It's Chuba.
Yes,
so.
It's Chuba.
No,
if you guys play a Chewbacca drop, so help me God, I will fly there tonight and I will punch you right in the baby maker. But like this kid can play. But I had it ready.
Yep.
The important thing
for some reason.
Yep. Know, nothing.
You ask for a Jaylen Brown cut, you're swimming. But you ask for a
when did you ask for a Jaylen Brown cut?
2 weeks ago. It was about this time 2 weeks ago.
And it wasn't even like, a real Chewbacca. It was a bad impersonation of
horrible
Chewbacca.
Knockoff.
We're
you know who that was.
How's it
right?
going at EEI? It's so bad,
so bad
that we can't even afford a premium Chewbacca drop.
They're like, oh, we don't have a deal with Lucasfilm. Play this guy doing a knockoff version of Chewie.
That's Julian Edelman on Monday Night Football.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
Good.
Hey, you know what? Great.
Great. Thanks. The point being,
can
the
I
point
finish?
Being, a guy like Chuba Hubbard is like he might just be a complete flameout. He might get to the pro level, see that he doesn't have, you know, 5 yard wide holes to run through where he can take off, or maybe he comes to the Patriots and all of a sudden it's like, oh no, wow, the Patriots actually have speed. Like this kid can play at the next level for a team that values pass protection, the dump off, the screen, jet sweeps, the short, the intermediate routes. You got to take a chance on what, like, I've seen this kid, Shai Smith, this wide receiver from South Carolina, mocked to the Patriots a number of times. Good speed, great slot player. Yes, of course he'd be a natural fit, and they're probably dying to find an Edelman replacement. The Patriots need to take a chance on a player who could give you that next, not only the James White replacement, but that Alvin Kamara. They need
100%.
There's nobody anybody fears on this offense right now. They need to find a player or two that that defensive coordinators will start game planning for and legitimately fearing. And these are some of those guys they could take a chance on.
Let me just throw a little bit of a monkey wrench in this. The Patriots, as we sit here right now, and things change. They have a first round pick and a second round pick. They don't have a third. They then have a fourth, fifth, couple of sixth, and a seventh. Does Chuba Hubbard last to the fourth round, or have you got to try to trade back into that round in order to get him in your scenario?
They will have a third deal. It'll just be at the end of the third round because they're going to get a compensatory pick for Brady. So it's not their third round pick, which they were completely robbed of during that garbage parade of Spygate 2, but I digress. they will have a third round
pick. That is so insane. And you're right, Fitzy. I was thinking about that the other day when I was doing mock drafts and just looking at draft orders and things like that. And to think a third round pick where teams do get impact players, like there are third round picks that hit right away. And
Godwin
to think that they
Hunt,
don't
yes.
have one, whether they wanted to include it in a trade for a quarterback or whatever, like they don't have it because of that is insane. Oh, God.
The damage is done, my friend.
They're actually supposed to get three compensatory picks, one for Brady, one for Van Noy, one for Collins. Brady probably, in all likelihood, in the third round. Van Noy and Collins probably in the fourth.
So come on, guys.
Yeah, so who doesn't like it? If they identify one of these guys as an absolute perfect fit, as a shoe, like if they love Gainwell and they say, or they love Jamar Jefferson and say, like, we absolutely have to have this kid. He is definitely the James White replacement. Then you take one of your fourths or your proper fourth. You draft with your comp fourths, and we all know Belichick's going to at least make one or two of, you know, infuriating and out of nowhere first or second round selections. Anyway, you get one of these guys. You make sure that you've got redundancy or a safety pick for James White, and you take a chance and get one of these guys. There's no one anybody fears on the Patriots offense right now. You have to put You have to put some fear on the Patriots offense so that people think, oh, when this guy gets the ball in space, he's trouble.
Yeah,
have
I
you
want
resigned
a guy
your...
who...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, you want a guy, and we've talked about it all year, every other team has him, every playoff team anyway has him, where if you're on the other side of the 50, right, you're in your own territory, is there a guy capable of scoring a touchdown from there? It should. It's the NFL. There's a lot of speed. There's a lot of playmakers. Patriots didn't have one. Then you'd watch a matchup, and I know they're the two best teams, but Tampa Bay and Kansas City, they each have three, four, sometimes five on the field that are capable of a catch, one break, you know, miss a tackle, and then boom, to the house. Patriots don't have that. So that's why, I mean, third, fourth round, if you just find some guys that have dropped that have crazy speed, and even if they are kind of maybe they look like they're one-dimensional, whatever, you find a way to get that speed into your offense.
Yeah, let everybody else spend big on the bigger backs and the premium wide receivers in this draft. Find me somebody who can be a slot receiver and then either get me you know, a Jamar Jefferson to play that running back role and then grab a Felton or a Hubbard. And now all of a sudden it's like, whoa, the Patriots are all of a sudden diversifying the portfolio, and their offense, even though it doesn't have a quarterback yet, is starting to look unpredictable. I like it. I like it. At least just give me that chance as opposed to like, oh, here they go again. They don't need an outside guy. That's not what they need. They need some of these guys that can be great with the ball in space. Or at least that's what I feel.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. We'll touch on the Bruins and some issues they may be having. And then we'll even talk some Red Sox after the top of the hour as well. It's Dale and Keefe with Fitzy, Sports Radio WEEI.
Back to Dale and Keefe with Fitzy on WEEI.
All right, let's update you on a couple of things concerning your Boston Bruins. They return to play tomorrow. They are taking on the Islanders tomorrow, Uniondale, and then they play the Rangers in New York on Friday and Sunday. And it appears that they've got some issues that they're going to have to overcome on the defensive side of the puck right now. Their entire left side of their defense has been injured. Kevin Miller. Now you've got Jeremy Lauzon. Lauzon had surgery on a broken hand yesterday. He's going to be reevaluated in 4 weeks. Not that he'll be back in 4 weeks. Be reevaluated then. Kevin Miller will not travel with the team. Matt Grizzlick will, and theoretically should return at some point, probably not tomorrow. But, you know, that old Bill Parcells line, you can overcome injuries unless you get a bunch of them at the exact same position, maybe applying to the Bruins right now, fellas, because their defense is getting kicked around a bit.
Oh, my God. It's just one after another. And you knew going into the year, too, you were like, all right, here's a couple of guys that haven't played a ton. They're going to have to, you know, hopefully figure out that they belong, and they did, and now you're just like one after another, and now you're just absolutely testing the depth. Like, no team in the NHL has 10 good defensemen. Like, no. it's you're not built that way.
You're lucky.
And so
four.
They're gonna have to figure it out over the next several weeks.
Of the six who started opening night for the Bruins on defense, and it'll depend on Zboril, but they could have two. They could have two of the six who started opening night available to them. And now, there was another number that jumped out at me, not on defense, but in another area, and I sent it off to you guys. Rich, you were talking earlier about, I think it was the Boston Sports Info.
Oh, Boston Sports Info. Yeah, they had a good Tatum stat, and I know I saw you posted a Bruins one, too.
They had a Bruins one from Boston Sports Info. David Pastrnak and David Krejci. The last 31 regular season games, David Pastrnak has 22 goals. David Krejci has none.
Zero. And I know he's a pass-first guy,
but he's
zero
your
second-line
center,
right.
One of your primary power play guys, and has zero goals. Doesn't have a goal this year.
Crazy, isn't it?
I mean...
How is that?
Yeah.
Like, you would run into one, wouldn't you? Like, you see...
Like, one
Chara,
would hit you in the
Chara
butt
scored
or something.
A goal against the Bruins when they
yes.
played. And so, yeah, that is just bizarre, like, how that can happen.
You've got you've got other things that you're trying to overcome here. Offensive depth is not one of them, but you started to get some production in Tahoe. Charlie Coyle scored a goal. Trent Frederick scored a goal. They each got their first of the season, and you're thinking, okay, get some secondary scoring. That top line's always going to be great anyway. And all of a sudden, you're thinking, well, wait a minute. Well, he's hurt right now, but my second line center, David Krejci, doesn't have a goal in his last 31 games.
Yeah, it's been forever since he has scored. And then I know he's missed a handful of games, but Jake DeBrusk has one goal all season long. And you're like, that combination, the Krejci-DeBrusk duo, nobody's going to confuse it with Bergeron-Marchand. But still, you would think that those two combined, if it was a full season, what should that be? Close to 40 goals between the two of them? 25 for DeBrusk, maybe 15 for Krejci, somewhere in there. And for them at this point, through 16 team games, they have won. Like, that is not great.
And I will disagree with those who say this, and I've had this disagreement with the guys I work with on Nesson. I'm all done with breaking up the top line, trying to spread the scoring around. Why would I want to stick David Pastrnak with David Krejci when Krejci's struggling as badly as he is, and take the chance that he cools off David Pastrnak, who's got 9 goals in 9 games? No, thank you. I'll leave the top line alone and figure out these other guys who've got to sort things out on their own.
Yeah, and I guess just it would be that part. Like, can they sort it out on their own? And if Krejci is so ice cold, I guess I would counter that by saying Pastrnak is so hot that couldn't he score goals with anybody? And that's not even a shot at Krejci. Like, Krejci, you know, could be a solid player. But my point is he doesn't need two of the best players in the world on his line to score a lot of goals. Because right now it's still something we've talked about for years with the Bruins, where if they're on the power play, great chance of scoring. If their top line is on the ice, great chance of scoring. But if the second, third, or fourth line are out on the ice, you're just like, hey, don't give one up. Like, that's all you're hoping. Like, don't give one up because you're not going to score on your own. Whereas if you move Pasternak down, now if I see Bergeron, Marchand, and whoever, I'm thinking, okay, maybe these guys can score. And anytime Pasternak's on the ice, I'm thinking there's a chance of a goal. And I don't know, maybe you make it a little bit more difficult on the opponent, who's always just going to rush their top defensive pairing out there against that top line as much as they can. I'm not as opposed to it as you are, Dale, just because I don't think Krejci and DeBrusk can figure it out. Or Coyle was going through such a time where he wasn't doing anything. And so maybe they do need to shake it up a little bit.
Isn't Pasternak on such a heater now that you could veritably surround him with anybody, Dale, and the guy's going to find – like, he's going to feed. He's going to get his almost,
But somebody's got to get it to him. And that's right. And Krejci's still a good passer of the puck. Don't misunderstand my point. But, he's struggling so badly right now, other than assists and especially power play assists. Krejci's not producing anything for you. He's not available for the moment. Didn't practice today. Yeah. I don't know when he'll be back in the lineup. I have a feeling if I were Cassidy, I would keep the top line and leave him alone. A couple of quick numbers here from the weekend game in Tahoe, and this came out. The game was supposed to have been at 3 o'clock Sunday afternoon on NBC. Because of the problems they had with the ice the day before, they moved the game to 7 first and then to 7:30 Sunday night so they could avoid, ice problems. But they had to move the game to NBCSN. It became the most-watched regular season game in NBCSN history. The first regular season game to top 1 million viewers on NBCSN. It was the most-streamed regular season game in NBC sports history. And it killed it. And by the way, here in Boston, it really killed it, as you might expect. Right. I think they said that the number in Boston was like a 6.96, which for a regular season hockey game is a monster number.
People like trees.
People like trees.
People
they
like
also
a people like a nice view.
People like a nice view. People like a view. They'll talk about a view. The sun was shining. The game wasn't played at midnight, which helps. You know, had they been there the other day, maybe the rating wouldn't have been as strong at midnight.
Probably not.
But, it was picturesque, as they say.
If I'm going to stare into emptiness, I would rather stare into a perfectly blue mountaintop surrounded Lake Tahoe as opposed to an empty garden with tarps on seats. I would much rather stare at a postcard. It looked so nice, Dale. It looked like a virtual, like a Zoom back.
Your face, sun went over the mountains, went down over the mountains, and then you had that beautiful sunset, behind the mountains. Then it was like you said, a virtual. It was like Lucasfilms put it together.
Mm-hmm.
Figure out the right way to play it. Now, the Bruins, as we sit here right now, I think they've got the fourth or fifth best record in the National Hockey League. The problem is they haven't played any games. They have played just 16 games, only 6 of them at home so far. But the schedule, they had a bunch of games rescheduled again last night, not because of them, because of other teams. They will now play, if you can believe this, 5 games in 7 nights the last week of the season.
Ugh.
Told you that's going to be a problem heading into the playoffs. They might have dead legs for that first two games in the playoffs.
Well, I think what you'll also see, too, is depending on where you're at, what the standings look like, might just be, they play 3 of those 7 games. Or like, your star players play 3, and you stagger, obviously, you stagger it and make sure that they're as well-rested as possible for the playoffs. Because, that's a tough way to go in.
I mean, I'm looking at the schedule for the upcoming month of March. It is a monster. April is a monster. As we said, May. Right now, the last day of the regular season in the NHL is May 8th. I'm just telling you right now, based on my experiences and looking at the games that have been reshuffled and moved around, they're going to have to push that back as well. It's probably not going to end May 8th. They're going to add another week to the season or something.
Yeah.
But the toll, I'm looking at weeks here. For instance, just in the month of March, the Bruins have back-to-back weeks where they play 4 games in 7 nights. The first full week of March, the second full week of March, they've got a couple of those weeks in a row in the month of April where you're playing, and just as a for instance, Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I mean, there will be no rest for the weary. That's when your goaltender depth will be severely shaken, if not stirred. You know, that's where it's going to be so crucial that you have both Halak and Rask going at the same time, and where you can't have, you know, the entire left side of your defense hurt at the same time.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest killer right now, because you think they're pretty well equipped with the two goalies that are both solid. You know, they have a better backup than most teams have, that you should be able to kind of stay in all those games. But the defensemen that are dropping like flies, at some point you can't make up for that. You can't get down to like your third pair in on your AHL team is now getting called up and they have to play. No thanks.
Yeah.
The other thing you've got going here in Boston right now is, you guys know, we started the show talking about the Celtics and their issues. You've got a Celtics team that's struggling, that's apparently not getting along very well. You know, you've got questions about leadership and questions about the star players on the team, and you compare and contrast that with the hockey team that's all wearing neon sweatsuits into the game at Tahoe together because they thought it'd be a team-building exercise. There was the piece by Matt Porter in the Globe this week about how much they get along, how much they like each other, how much talent is more important. But if you have a talented team, the fact that you like each other and want to play for each other makes a huge difference. We said, you know, the Celtics' two top stars act at times like they don't want to pass the ball to anybody.
They're the biggest problem right now is Tatum and Brown. And it's funny because last night on the broadcast, they mentioned about a million times that they made the All-Star team. And you're like, yeah, they did. And they also just dipped below 500. And how many teams have multiple All-Stars that are below 500? They're currently in sixth place in the Eastern Conference. They have a half-game lead on the New York Knicks for seventh. And, oh, by the way, this year they are doing the expanded playoffs. So teams 7 through 10 have to basically play in a mini play-in tournament to even make it. So they are
a one-and-done tournament.
They are at risk because they're like, oh, you got to get home court in the first round. Well, they're at risk of being in this little play-in tournament and not even being in the real playoffs. That's where they are right now. And each night they've gone up against another young star, and that young star has outplayed them and gotten the win, the most important thing, whether it's Trae Young or Jokic or Doncic last night or Bradley Beal, whoever. Those guys have finished games better, and it's not like they're losing to really good teams. It's not like they're losing to teams that know exactly how to win. They're losing to other teams that are kind of like them, a couple of young, good players and like a 500 record, and they've been on the wrong end on all of it, and it just seems like something needs to change with Brown and Tatum. Not that you're getting rid of them, obviously, but either their mindset, their supporting cast, their coaching, something has to change because they are at a breaking point, it feels like, right now.
Hey, this is interesting, guys. So during the break, our pal Rob Bradford of WEEI.com, sends me an article from 2 years ago that was posted to the website. The title was "Why Brad Stevens Isn't a Fan of Team Captains." And this is as we talk about like the lack of leadership or the fact that they seem a bit rudderless, even though
yes,
they've got two all-stars on the roster, Rich, and they're now a sub 500 team. This quote jumped out at me. "I'd say out of the 12 years that I've been a head coach," that includes the Butler time, and this was, of course, written 2 years ago, "we've rarely had them," those being captains. "And the reason being is that you want to empower everyone to add leadership within their own authentic way."
So you have 12 captains.
Great.
Which means you have none.
You have no captains right now.
You absolutely should get leadership from people other than your captains. They should contribute leadership.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Right.
But you need that figure. That in a hockey case, it's three guys. Three guys wear the A. By the way, Krejci was hurt Sunday, couldn't play. They put the A on Brandon Carlo's sweater for the first time in his life, in his career. He said it was the greatest honor of his career. That's how much it meant to him.
Yeah.
That, you know, he goes in and that letter A is on his sweater when he goes in.
Talking about like Edelman last season didn't have the captainship. There's eight captains on the Patriots. What it meant to Brady, he becomes a captain when he goes down to Tampa Bay for the first time. Like, these things do matter to people. When I hear something like that, again, not to be critical of somebody who has been successful, is the current coach, at least not critical for no reason. But that to me just reeks of college coach mentality.
Yeah.
Like
it sounds like you think if you name a captain. Basically, his point was, like, if you name two captains, you have, like, 11 other guys that you're sort of saying you're taking away from their leadership. It's like, if you think they're that fragile, like, you think they're just going to pout and, like, never speak up? Like, come on. They're professional athletes. If a guy has something to say, I feel like they're going to say it. And they're like, well, I'm not a captain, so I guess I shouldn't speak up. Like, I don't think that's how it works. But at times like this, you kind of need somebody to lead you out of the struggle that they're in. And everybody's looking around like, oh, well we're all leaders, so I won't say anything. And then if you're Tatum and Brown, you're like, I'll just, as long as I get the shot at the end, I don't really care.
You go back to coaching. The differences in coaching styles between Bruce Cassidy and Brad Stevens seems even more dramatic as you go day by day, how the Bruins are handling, you know, issues that they've got from a roster makeup standpoint, and how the Celtics are handling how things are going with them. 617-779-7937. Right back to the calls with you. Dale and Keith with Fitzy, Sports Radio, WEEI.